This is Earth Files, the award-winning news site with the latest updates in science, environment, and real X-Files. Podcasting in-depth reports beyond the 6 o'clock news by Emmy Award-winning journalist Linda Moulton Howe.
Every once in a while, there is a book that grabs your mind as revelation. In my life, one such book is The Gods of Eden by William Bramley, first published in 1989. William Bramley was then 36 years old, an older student in law school at Santa Clara University in California. Between high school graduation and law school, he had gotten a Bachelor of Arts degree in sociology because he was always fascinated by the political and war dynamics of human societies. But he needed to earn a practical living for his family and worked in hotel management for 15 years. Finally, in his decision to go to law school, he also started a book about a question that had always troubled him. Why does humanity war so much? To William Bramley's great surprise, the more he read about wars as far back as Mesopotamia, he also found a reoccurring theme of strange lights and aerial objects in the sky, sometimes connected by eyewitnesses to foul-smelling mists on the ground. So finally, when his book was published, William Bramley called it The Gods of Eden, and the book flap explains why in his own words, quote, UFOs have been lurking in the shadows of history for centuries. Surprisingly, they might be a key to unraveling the human puzzle, unquote. One of his chapters has haunted me. It's entitled The Black Death. This week I talk with William Bramley to ask him about his research into the plague that killed nearly half of Europe in the mid-1300s and the link he found to the UFO phenomenon.
Yeah, you know, that chapter to me is really the core of the book. To me, the whole book revolves around that chapter. Initially, when I started The Gods of Eden, I just thought it was an economic motive for the people who sort of get people to participate in the war. You know, you'll have an armaments manufacturer, or you'll have a political leader, somebody who has an obvious motive for going to war. But then I started getting into the religious beliefs that trigger war. You can get people to go to war over religious beliefs. And that's really obvious today in the people who will be suicide bombers, the Islamic suicide bombers and all of that. A certain type of religious belief seems to especially trigger that, and that's these apocalyptic beliefs in the end of the world and the Messiah. And that seems to, for a lot of people, enough to get them to participate in warfare, thinking that they are part of this grand apocalyptic scenario. So then I looked at, okay, well, where did all of these apocalyptic beliefs come from? And then you trace the origin of the Christian apocalyptic belief, the Jewish beliefs, even maybe the Islamic beliefs. And they all trace down to these angels and these entities that come from the sky and instill these beliefs in certain prophets. And then these prophets go out and get everybody very excited about them. So that's when I finally hit Sitchin and some of these books about the ancient astronauts, that these could be UFOs. At that point, I thought, this is getting pretty wild. Whoever these UFOs are, they are here deliberately instilling religious beliefs that easily trigger people into going to war with each other. And I was really on the fence about that because I started reading more of the UFO literature. A very common idea is that the UFOs are more benign. They're here to help us, but the reason they stay in the background is because we're so warlike, they don't want to risk being attacked. There's a reason for them staying in the background, which is more benign. I couldn't really decide which way is it. And then I thought, okay, what I'll do is I'll start exploring these apocalyptic eras in human history when you have a lot of disease and these strange religious movements arise or a lot of warfare and see, are there UFO reports from those eras? And one of the biggest apocalyptic eras was the Black Death, started in the 14th century, where at least half of Europe's population was wiped out during a relatively short period.
Let me just clarify for listeners that the Black Death, also known as bubonic plague and pneumonic plague, was 1347 to 1350, 4 years when all of this death occurred.
Yeah, it was just an incredible apocalyptic era. So I thought, okay, well, what I'll do is I'll just go see, were there any reports of unusual aerial activity during that time? I'll never forget it. I went to the UCLA Research Library, and they had like two or three books on it. The second book I looked at, I just was stunned because this author had just gone back and collected the stories that people were reporting of unusual phenomena connected to the Black Death.
And this is Johannes Noel, and the book has a copyright date of 1926. It's entitled The Black Death, A Chronicle of the Plague.
Correct. I was flabbergasted. What people were reporting, well, they called them comets, but they were clearly not comets from the actual descriptions. These were bright flying objects, and they were said to be spraying gas. And this was a very common thing that happened from town to town, from region to region, where you have these gases being spread, and the people at that time said, well, these are the gases, well, they called them mists, actually, and that these mists were the cause of the Black Death. In many cases, they said that they came from these objects in the sky that were spraying them, and that these reports of these bright lights spraying gas started in China, and then they continued to repeat themselves in Europe. And then you also found in his book and a couple of others that I found after that where people would report just simply the mists. They wouldn't necessarily see the bright lights, but they would also see mists. And in a couple of occasions, the mists were kind of bluish in color. The third phenomenon, which I found very intriguing, was the Men in Black phenomenon were happening at that time too, where in a number of the villages and towns, they would report that these human-like figures dressed in black would appear on the outskirts of a town, and they had these long instruments that they would kind of wave back and forth. And right after that, a plague would break out. Sometimes they reported these figures walking through a town with these long instruments, and right afterwards, the plague would break out in these towns. The interesting thing is that when they were out in the fields, they called them scythes in the reports, thinking that they were mowing down the wheat or whatever grain they were growing, and that this was symbolic of the death of the people later, but they reported that the wheat or the grain never actually got cut. So I interpret that to be actually that they just had some instrument that they were waving around and spraying out whatever germ element that they were spraying out into the town.
And weren't these figures supposed to have cloaks and became the basis for what is called the figure of death in Europe, which was the cloaked figure with the scythe?
That's correct, and that's where we get that cloaked figure. It's from these figures that were appearing then with the scythes mowing people down during the Black Death.
In the very year 1347, the beginning of the Black Plague, it is also the same year that Friends of God, organized by Johann Tauler, emerged. And this is a link to the role of the Rosicrucians in Europe and in Germany specifically at this time, and that their focus was on apocalyptic events to come.
That's correct. What happened in that environment, there was a lot of this apocalyptic fear going on. People were wondering why the Catholic Church couldn't do anything about this problem. And a lot of people thought that God was ushering in the end of the world at the time. You had these rather strange, unusual organizations come up, Friends of God being the main one that I focus on, where they had these great apocalyptic beliefs with a connection to this network of secret societies, of which the Rosicrucians were one. And this network of secret societies throughout history sort of parallels and connects to the UFO phenomenon from very early in human history up until more recently. We get all of these UFO events happening in connection with the Black Death, and meanwhile, at the same time, out of this network of these secret societies comes this new apocalyptic movement, which then eventually results in the Protestant Reformation in the 16th century.
Now, you have come up with a word that you're using for this outside influence in humanity's history. Can you explain what that word is and what your overall view is now of the relationship between a non-human intelligence and this planet?
Yeah, I use the word custodial society or custodians, meaning an extraterrestrial society that appears to have actual custody of the Earth. The Earth is their property. They are in custody of it. This kind of goes back to the work of Charles Fort, who wrote in the very early part of the 20th century in his book of The Damned and New Lands, where he sort of speculated as to exactly that, that all of these strange phenomena that he was finding even back then led him to conclude that the Earth was a possession. The people who were flying around in these objects, they were extraterrestrial in origin, and that in some way that through some secret method or through some secret societies, humankind was being directed by them. And so I just gave it the term custodian, and then I follow through throughout history. I kind of go way back to when in ancient Sumeria and in the ancient religions, they were talking about how they had these human-like gods who came down from the skies. They were the controllers or the leaders of the human race. The human race was at best a slave race at that time. And then they talk about, in some of the texts, a way to keep control, and that is to breed factions. You have one group of people fight another group of people. And that's one way to basically keep control over all of them. That's something that Machiavelli wrote about in The Prince, Gods of Eden. The book came out back in 89, and at the time I thought, okay, it'll be interesting to see if the theory holds up, because back in 89, the Iron Curtain was coming down, the communist bloc was breaking up, which I thought was a very positive thing, and I still do. But then I noticed, though, that there were still these little flare-ups involving Islam. Either in 89 or 90, I was giving a talk, and people were asking me, well, you know, do you think this is really true? Because, look, we seem to be now entering the age of Aquarius. We have this great struggle ending between the West and communism. And I thought, well, okay, this will be an interesting test. But if the Gods of Eden is true, my prediction is that Islam will become the next great faction to actually breed hot war. What I thought was happening was that the West versus communism wasn't really breeding a lot of hot war anymore. Hot meaning actual armed conflict. We had the Vietnam War that ended. We had some little thing in Angola, but it really wasn't generating a lot of real armed conflict. Now we have another faction that I trace in my book also to the UFO phenomenon, and that's Islam, which now has become the faction that is helping to breed more hot war with actual violence.
If non-humans have been manipulating human life on the planet for centuries and are behind the wars, including the United States' presence in Iraq right now, what is it that the non-humans want?
Well, that's an awfully good question. From my point of view, at least in doing Gods of Eden, I feel like I'm kind of at that point where there seems to be some evidence here, but I don't know that I totally understand the motive. Other than the human race, I think Charles Fort, again, back in the early 1900s, says that we have the equivalent status of cattle or sheep, or not a very flattering point of view, and I'm not sure I share that exactly.
Meaning that we are owned by something, monitored by something, and used by something.
Yeah, exactly. And that was his theory. That seems to be holding up, that basically we're still a possession. And the means of holding onto that possession are simply being followed like they were before. Now, if you go back to the old creation stories, it was real obvious. Human beings were engineered essentially to do labor, to toil in the mines, to get mineral substances for the gods and keep them fed, keep them housed. What happened, though, is it became less obvious because the UFOs, they didn't disappear. They simply kind of went into the background. They started following more of a Machiavellian pattern. So then we have to ask, okay, they're no longer here just out in the open like people were claiming they were before, out in the open saying, okay, go ahead and build this pyramid for us and do this or that. So what's the motive now? And here I guess you have to kind of look at maybe the abduction testimony. There seems to be some kind of breeding program. There still seems to be activity related to genetics. And what that might be, gosh, I don't know.
War is an event that causes a lot of death. Is it possible that death itself is one of the goals by non-humans?
I feel there's good evidence for it. The soul or the spirit is separable from the body. I mean, that's an idea that goes way back. Christians express it. Pretty much most religions express it. They just have a different idea of what happens to the soul after death. So I think that concept in itself is valid. I think the near-death research that people have done confirms that or provides evidence for it. I know there's a lot of dispute about this, by the way. You know, there's people who don't think that's what it is, but I do. And so the process of death seems to involve the soul leaving the body at death, going through some kind of amnesia process, and then being reborn. And that's the old idea of reincarnation that was especially expressed by the Hindus. The Mormons express that idea also in some of their writings. So we find that this concept is very strong in a lot of religions. It's not so popular in Christianity anymore. But in other religions, the idea of being reborn is. And it's that whole thing about dying, having amnesia, and being reborn that seems to further this agenda. Because one thing that I noticed, too, is that in the UFO phenomena that we read about today, a lot of the abductees, they seem to actually be given commands, or there's some kind of mental process that's inflicted on them by their captors to make them forget. And so the ability or the technology of the UFO to instill amnesia on human beings seems to be very much there and be part of their practice. So the question is this being done on a very large scale? So that's where death might fit in, because if we keep forgetting that we are souls and we keep kind of getting recycled over and over again, thinking that we're not, it keeps that aspect of being imprisoned here, which is something the Gnostics talked about, the Essenes talked about, the imprisonment aspect of human life.
If reincarnation is the machinery of the universe, and that there are non-human intelligences that are focused on reincarnation here on Earth, meaning the recycling of a spiritual soul body in and out of containers over a long period of time, which might even explain dividing the population into different religious perspectives on purpose to make them war with each other. And here's the speculation: because war causes death, and death would lead to the souls having to recycle.
You know, I never thought of that, and I think that's really interesting. Yeah. War certainly would contribute to that, just like disease would and any other cause of death and old age. So these are all things that factor in. But yeah, certainly war does, and it does it in an especially violent way. And I'd have to wonder, is there a difference in how people experience death differently, or the soul experience differently, if they suffered violently or if they suffered gradually through a disease or just the effects of old age? Does that serve a purpose? Does that fit into a program some way?
If the manipulation of one or more non-human intelligences still has a grip on what is happening to human life and politics of Earth, what is it that perpetuates this hold on the Earth, and what do they want?
What they want, the furthest that I can go, is business as usual. The patterns we're seeing today are exactly the patterns we saw thousands of years ago. It just hasn't changed. But these underlying forces still continue to go on, meaning that whatever society, the UFO society is, they probably have a different perception of time than we do. To them, maybe 1,000 years is like 20 years to us. And so this can be sustained longer. Again, this is speculation too.
But what do you speculate are the agendas of these custodians, as you describe them?
Just to keep Earth as a possession as it's always been. And whatever, to quote Charles Fort, whatever our quote-unquote mysterious usefulness might be, we still have that usefulness. We still have that same usefulness we had 2,000, 3,000, 4,000 years ago. I guess it's just the nature of a society or a country that once you have a colony, you just hang on to it, even if it really doesn't maybe do you a whole lot of good anymore. You just manage it the same way. You just keep it the same way. And that might be all that there is to this. And to me, the use of a Machiavellian technique is simply a technique of management.
Meaning under the surface is the control, not out in front of us.
Yeah, exactly. It's just simply a way to keep Earth as a colony. And the way you do that is you keep its inhabitants not really knowing what's going on. And so consumed with fighting each other, so consumed with all of the problems that this brings, that all we have time to really think about mostly are problems. We're worried about our paychecks. Now we're worried about what Russia's going to do in Georgia. We're worried about if Iran is going to be bombed by the United States or Israel. And so seeing the outside never can happen. Our usefulness has changed, but we're still useful, but in a different way.
To underscore that stumbling upon the UFO link to the odd and frequently violent state of human affairs has happened to other thoughtful researchers before, William Bramley told me that he had never read early 20th century Charles Fort until his third draft of The Gods of Eden. Then he knew he had to include a quote from the 1919 first book by Charles Fort entitled The Book of the Damned, in which Fort explained the damned were all subjects excluded from formal science, and one of those damned subjects was the involvement of other non-human intelligences with planet Earth. Quote, "Human beings appear to be a slave race breeding on an isolated planet in a small galaxy. As such, the human race was once a source of labor for an extraterrestrial civilization, and still remains a possession today. To keep control over its possession and to maintain Earth as something of a prison, that other civilization has bred never-ending conflict between human beings, has promoted human spiritual decay, and has erected on Earth conditions of unremitting physical hardship. This situation has existed for thousands of years, and it continues today." Unquote. Now, the challenge for 21st century humans is to face the fact that we're not alone in this universe, and we no longer have to get down on our knees before the gods.
Thanks for listening to this Earth Files podcast from the edges of science, environment, and real X-Files. Go to www.earthfiles.com. to see more than 1,000 Earth Files reports with photographs, drawings, and documents. And visit Earth Files every day, every week, for new reports and new podcasts. That's www.earthfiles.com.